All right, Friday at noon, welcome to the Presidio Bitcoin Jam.
Hey guys. Live.
And welcome to all of our new visitors here from LinkedIn.
Yes, we're now streaming to LinkedIn.
We're streaming live on LinkedIn, and I just learned that Max is a LinkedIn maximalist.
I have become a LinkedIn maximalist, guys. I have
How
to
did
say,
that happen?
Yeah, I thought I was going to defect from Twitter and run to Master. It's LinkedIn. I'm not even kidding. I don't know where we're going to start this, but fuck it. Well, let's start here. We're going to talk more about what we just announced this week, the Type 1 Summit, some serious things to discuss. But can I just say, the alpha is on LinkedIn. Twitter, as you said, there's so much damn content you're posting. There's noise. And on LinkedIn, everybody and their sisters on LinkedIn, and ain't nobody posting anything interesting. I've got so much more interest and feedback in our event on LinkedIn, and I'm shocked. And
you got to watch your NSFW mouth.
Oh,
it's work. It's Dude, literally work.
Also, BK, I got to call you out for a second on here. Actually, shout out to Anjali because she found this. I don't know why. We were talking about people coming to the event. She looked at your profile and said, "Yo, what is going on with DK going unhinged? Come at me, bro."
Yeah, that's my LinkedIn profile. That's my bio.
That's your bio. What is going on with this unhinged bio?
I don't know. What are you going to say? Come at me, bro.
Should we come at you?
Like, connect. Let's go.
The spiciest thing I've seen on LinkedIn.
I know, by far.
I think there's not like as much rage bait on LinkedIn, too. The algo probably doesn't optimize for that yet, at least.
Yeah, exactly.
Fertile ground.
Yeah. And to be clear, most content on LinkedIn sucks. Like most of it's just like, oh, congratulations, I'm doing a thing. But if you actually have something interesting to post,
Max is now insulted about half the viewership.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, it's trash. But everyone's there and everyone's addicted. And because it's all trash, there's opportunity. So if you're not already LinkedIn maxing, like I highly
But that would require us to be putting out good content.
Well.
Speaking of good content,
low bar.
I'm going to do a quick product review.
Come out,
okay,
bro.
It has nothing to do with Bitcoin or software.
You got new running shoes?
I got new running shoes.
Oh, new running shoes.
How did I guess that?
How did
I
didn't you even
tell you. Not revealed in the
I didn't
chat.
Tell you that.
No.
Wow, good guess.
Yeah.
So I bought...
Seems like you guys have known each other for a while.
I bought the OG Nike Vaporfly like 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
I bought
that. With like the carbon plate in it, right?
Yeah.
It helps
and I mean, there's been studies after study, and Strava data shows like it makes a material difference on your performances, like whether it be on the track or marathons or whatever. Like,
and that are like they
to
legal?
The tune, like to the tune of 4%.
Are they legal for Olympic
massive. Yes.
Marathon?
They're legal. Okay. So so I've had them for a long time, but they wear out quickly. So I usually just reserve them.
You get like
for the
200
track.
Miles on them or something, right?
Something like that.
Only 200 miles. Why is that? That's even nothing.
They're brittle shoes. They're performance, but
it's like, yeah, it's like
I know nothing
F1.
About track. It's like
if you have a
like
Formula F1. One car,
you wouldn't drive it to hold
or like or performance tires versus like reliable.
As someone who knows nothing, would it be better just to do it barefoot?
No,
okay,
especially these shoes because they like you as soon as you put them on and run, you feel the performance increase. It's like crazy,
really.
Yeah,
so like you have I'd be curious if you timed yourself barefoot versus the shoes, how much they make a difference.
Barefoot is definitely not fast. Anyway, so I've had those shoes a long time, but yet they have like something like 170 miles on them. They're tattered. So I bought the latest and greatest Vaporflies, the Vaporfly 4s. And I've got to say, they're the coolest looking shoe that I've ever seen. They're amazingly cool looking, but I wore them today on the track. And
this was Maiden Void.
Little disappointed in the performance.
Oh, no.
I had read reviews where nothing's like the OGs, and I actually agree with those reviews. They both feel, they don't feel as much, they don't feel as fast as the OG Vaporflies, and my times in the 800 intervals were slightly worse. And
okay, but then what are your times in the 800 intervals?
Well, I was expecting 1 or 2 seconds per 800 faster due to fitness gains, not even the shoes.
Right.
Maybe even a boost because of the shoes, and I was 1 second slower. Oh, and anyone who does 800 intervals
is that the shoes or
that
the,
like 1 second, you know, is significant.
The fitness gains you're talking about here. How do we know there are fitness gains?
Well, I don't. I mean, it's not like a controlled test, right?
But these are sub 3 minute 800s. I'm sure
they're sub, barely though. With these new shoes, barely sub three minute. But anyway, a little disappointed, but they are the coolest looking shoes.
You also bring up a very important, I think this is like a life philosophy question many of us have to struggle with. And it's a choice we all have to make, which is at the end of the day, you know, performance matters, of course. We all want to win and do well with whatever we're doing, but also so does swag. right? And so sometimes there is a trade-off between performance and swag. And I think about this like in the game of basketball. It's like, all right, you want to be the best, Michael Jordan, but that man's kind of a psychopath, right? Uh-uh. Do you really want to be Michael Jordan? No. You want to be Allen Iverson. Didn't actually win the championship, but this man's out here, you know, he's wild now. He's having a good time. Practice. You want to talk about practice? And so sometimes, you know, you still want to do well, of course, but like, yeah.
So I kind of like having both pair of shoes.
Yeah,
like,
there you go.
When I want to perform my best or look my best.
There you go.
What about Scottie Pittman? Isn't he the Bitcoiner?
Pippen?
Oh, that. Yeah. But isn't he a shitcoiner?
Well, I mean, most celebrities are Bitcoiners turn shitcoiner. What, whatever pumps are.
It sounds like Parasol or something. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe.
Anyhow, did you mention something about Type 1 Summit?
Oh, well, thank you for that excellent layup. Alley-oop, talking about swag.
What is Type 1? What does that even mean?
Yeah, great question. So Kardashev scale, everyone's probably heard of this, or maybe you haven't heard of this, sci-fi, very popular among nerds, I suppose. But the idea is that...
He's an author, right?
Science fiction author, yeah.
Who wrote a few books. Was it a particular book that this term came from?
That's a good question. I actually don't know. I mean, it's become such a popular term. I don't remember which book it originated from. But anyways, the gist of it is that taking a step back, as civilization, we are direct, like our advancement, our evolution is directly proportional to how much energy we can harness and use. And so this is something that's always bothered me, even though I definitely consider myself an environmentalist, talk about solar and all this stuff. I've been in that industry and that world for decades at this point, almost decades. But I really, really kind of despise this idea of like use less. And so, use less. Like the whole history of humanity, the whole history of bringing people out of poverty, doing new stuff, of pushing the frontiers is literally directly correlated to using more energy. That's it. Like if you wanted to track one metric to say where are we at as a society, it's how much energy have we harvested for productive or however you want to define that purposes. And so the
And more energy naturally becomes better use of energy.
That's correct.
Those kind of go hand in hand, and people seem to, I think, get a little twisted about it. Like using more energy, then the goal, you find you're using more energy and able to accomplish more. You're like, quick, let's use it more efficiently. So in effect, that's like a yin and yang kind of tug, you know, and pull that is kind of aligned with the environmentalist ideal.
Totally.
Right? So totally. It's really both.
Yeah. Right? And you know, as we're using more energy, we're doing so in a much more efficient, much cleaner, much like more, I guess you even say humanitarian way. So we can get into all that. But the Kardashev scale itself, type 1, type 2, type 3, type 1, use all the energy from your star hitting your planet. So that would be all the irradiation that hits the Earth. Type 2 would be use all of the energy from your sun itself. So you build like, it's like a Dyson sphere or something around the sun. Type 3 would be all from your, so I guess that solar system, all your galaxy. I have no idea how the hell you get to type 3. Type 1 is very, very, very doable. Type 2 I actually think is pretty doable.
But even type 1 from here, that's a hugely ambitious goal. It's not like where are we? Are we 2% in or 5%
well,
in?
Well, we were debating this in our signal chat.
We're 3 to 4 orders of magnitude away.
That's right.
So away from 100%.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
But much closer than my intuition. Like my intuition before looking at the numbers or really having any idea at all was 6 to 7 order to magnitude, like 10 million times away. But it's only like 1,000 times away.
Yeah.
Man, wow.
2 to 4. So anyways. I mean,
it feels like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Next week.
It's like, yeah, matter of time.
One, as we start accelerating, right? Like, and I think one of the other things you have to keep in mind, there's so many things, but like, when we talk about Bitcoin, we talk about this technology, it's, you can't look at anything like in isolation because everything affects everything else, right? Yeah. So it was like, is all of our technology like just, you know, skyrockets on the AI front? Well, we're gonna talk about that. That increases energy demand. And as we have, you know, Bitcoin is what I see as energy-backed money and the ability to coordinate markets much better. That allows things to move faster. And so it's really hard to like, it's really hard to predict how long these things are gonna take, which is why one of my other core theses in life is just like, don't ask all the questions. Don't be the guy in the middle of the curve or in the middle of the bell curve. If you see a curve like a Moore's law, or you see a curve of, you know, I don't know, like there's other laws I'm forgetting the names of, but if you see some curve that's directly relation, you know, between how much of something we deploy and the cost of something, like don't ask too many questions, just roll with it. And because that's emergent intelligence. And that's one of my core beliefs in life is the human mind is limited. We can use the mind for very certain things, but at the end of the day, nature's intelligence is far greater than ours. So type 1 summit, you know, if we're 3 to 4 orders of magnitude away from using all of the sun's energy that's hitting our planet, you know, it's interesting because if you zoom out, it's like we think we're so advanced and, you know, And you know, and we just have so many just like political quibblings and all this bullshit argumentation. It's like, dude, we're so early in civilization. If you can just zoom out a little bit. It's like one day, the way that we look at a lot of ancient civilizations, although there's a question of how far an ancient civilization has gotten, that's a different rabbit hole we could go down if you want.
We're going to talk Mars.
We could talk Mars for sure.
Well, actually,
I was going to say ancient Egyptians and the Atlanteans.
I know.
Do you know offhand how much energy hits Mars?
I don't.
That'd be interesting.
One of the guys I'm a big fan of that I shout out to this dude, Casey Hanemer, who's like taking my solar maximalism mainstream, like all of Silicon Valley. We'll talk about this. They've been very skeptical, but I think he has the best blog on the internet. Like that man, I mean, this is...
Say it again. What was it?
Casey Hanemer. He's the guy that runs Terraformer Industries.
Okay.
I've been reading his blog. I've been just binging it for the last several months. He's starting to go mainstream now. I think he was on the Dwarkesh palette a couple weeks ago, which is like kind of bringing him to the mainstream. Oh, cool. And I mean this with all the affection in the world, like very high tiz, like you read the articles and it's just like, he goes through every calculation as highly as you want, like everything you want. So he's got an article just on the Mars one.
Okay.
And I would recommend basically just read his blog.
Cause I didn't look at the deep, but I saw NASA just reported there's evidence of microbial life in Mars history.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
I didn't even know that.
Perseverance. Was that the name of the rover or whatever?
Yep. And then someone also linked to a Harvard.edu post talking about evidence of nuclear power in the Mars history. I didn't read that either.
Wait a second.
But it came from Harvard.edu, so it, you know,
so it must be true. It must be right. The Fed.gov is back, so
just anyway, sure just saying. Like, when we tapped out the energy on the Earth, we can go elsewhere.
I will say though, I never in my wildest dreams. I'm used to being someone that brings a little bit more provocative. Never did I expect Steve to make me go, dude, what the fuck? Like, there was life on Mars. We got the evidence, baby.
It might have ended in tragedy.
Yeah, exactly. So there's rabbit holes. How many times have we been through this? Interesting question. Are we just going through another Kali Yuga right now? Yes, that's another interesting rabbit hole. But coming back to what we can do with our world today, you know, again, I think we're probably going through something like the Great Filter right now, which is like, will we survive or will we not? And as a species, I mean, we have nuclear weapons, we have all this stuff that's really, really bad and people that are angry at each other and all this fucked up stuff. But we also have incredible technologies, like energy technologies like solar, one day nuclear, but for now solar storage. We have, you know, something like Bitcoin, which is probably the greatest human coordination tool ever invented. And we have Nostr, we have all these incredible building blocks. And so if we make it through here and we're, you know, 1,000 years in the future, people will one day look back at our civilization and be like, dude, these guys were so primitive. They were using, you know, just a tiny fraction of their energy. They were trapped on this rock. I think we're going to shoot for the stars and beyond. So that's part of the thesis. The short-term thesis for the Type 1 summit is also, you know, if I put on more of my just like investor hat and like kind of where are we in the world today, there is a very specific need we have to, I would call it free electricity markets, or to build the internet of electricity. So over the last several months, so for those of you who don't know, my background is originally in solar energy. So back in the early 2010s, I got fully solar pilled by Ramez Nam and a few other guys. It was like the Casey Hanemer before Casey Hanemer. I think he actually solar pilled Casey. Shout out to Ramez. He's actually going to come to our event. So we're chatting about it next
week. That's amazing. Great.
Alpha Leap.
Yeah,
he's the man. I think he was at the Singularity Institute. And so it's like tight with Kurzweil and those guys. And he's got some fascinating books also about like human computer interaction, which we'll talk more about. Very, very good futurist. And anyways, so I got fully solar pilled. And basically the thesis when I got fully solar pilled was every doubling of cumulative capacity of solar installed, the levelized cost of electricity, the end cost of electricity comes down by, we thought at the time, 20-25%. It turns out it's more like 40-42%. I think 42 is the number Casey is quoting. Storage, batteries, lithium ion batteries. And there's other materials, there's other formulas you could use for batteries, but lithium ion batteries have been on a similar cost curve, which is to say every doubling of cumulative capacity installed, you end up with something like 20-25% reduction in the levelized cost of full cycle storage. And so again, you know, left side of the curve, zoom out, don't ask why, don't ask questions. I mean, the high level answer to why, similar to something like Moore's Law, is economies of scale and getting better with production. both of these technologies are technologies that you can just mass produce over and over and over and over again. As you get better and you build more factories and you have more expertise, similar to computer chips. In fact, what is a solar panel? But a little thing of, you know, silicon that takes a photon and converts it to an electron, which, by the way, I heard someone mention that we should call solar panels quantum converters. Way sexier, way better. But it's very similar, and similar to lithium ion batteries. You get these economies of scale, and the more you make as you mass produce, you get all these benefits of bringing down the cost. And so, I've been following this for well over a decade. Everyone who's ever made a prediction about this has, including Mez himself, has been wrong and always to the under, always, every single time. And so that at some point, there's always this like kind of running joke in the energy circles where you have the IEA, the International Energy Agency. I don't know if it's international. I think it's international. And they're kind of similar to like what we'd expect from fed.gov or harvard.edu. And every year, you know, it's so fucking funny. Every year with solar panels, they would show, okay, so from last year to this year, there was a whatever, 40%, 30%, whatever numbers they're using, reduction in the levelized cost of electricity. But this year, it's going to flatline. And the next year, it would go down 20, 30%. And they'd be like, okay, so there's another 20 to 30% reduction in the cost of electricity, but this year, it's going to flatline.
Was there a reason that they thought it was going to flatline again and again? Like, it felt like there was some limitation to the ability to shrink the converters or something?
I don't know anyone at the IEA, but my high-level take is the same reason that all of our centralized institutions are collapsing. Everything is...
Maybe they were long Exxon or something.
Maybe they were long Exxon. I mean, that's the even more cynical view. I was even going to be less cynical and just say most people in these, you know, positions of power, you don't lose your job for saying it's going to go up 2%.
Right.
You lose your job if you make some what sounds like a crazy person, you know, prediction, and right, then you're wrong. So
this doesn't apply to Bitcoin price predictors, right?
Hey, man, the Bitcoiners are already crazy. So there's no one judging us. Anyways, so that keeps happening. And so I've been just following these curves closely for well over a decade. And, you know, at the same time, obviously, I've been very deep into Bitcoin. I see Bitcoin as energy-backed money. Satoshi Energy, one of my portfolio companies, really, really pilled me on that about 5 years ago. And we've talked about this, but I literally, at the end of the day, I think it's a commodity currency. I think we're going to have the ability to answer empirical questions like what percentage of the world's monetary or energy supply is necessary to secure the monetary supply, which the gold bugs have asked, but no one's been able to answer because it's all sort of theoretical. I think we're going to answer that in our lifetime. Shout out to Drew Bansal for posing that question. And by the way, shout out, I don't even know if you know, you guys know this yet, but I mentioned this to Mark or to our friend Mark. Mark, if you're listening, thinking a little bit more about this in the context of I have a crazy idea for who could be doing this research and related to our PBJ discussion of who are the economists who are going to study Bitcoin. Anyways, there's all this energy stuff. But yeah, so I've seen all this happening over years. And, you know, it's been interesting to me, but obviously my focus in the last couple of years has been more on Nostr, more on the Lightning Network, more on scaling Bitcoin. In the last several months, a few things have changed my perspective on the world. One thing is, and without doxing anyone's numbers or whatever, basically the companies I know that started off in Bitcoin mining, still a great business, but like across the board have started like pivoting into AI, and holy shit, I have never seen anything like this in my entire life.
Yeah.
Without, again, revealing anyone's numbers, but just look at Crusoe, look at Satoshi, look at all of these companies. Like, dude, it's just like, it's just like a vertical line. And you can read my essay. It's hivemind.vc/grid. I lay all this out in excruciating detail. But like the majority of this is being driven by data centers, right? So depending on, you know, whose numbers you look, you have Zuckerberg committing to, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars to build, you know, data centers the size of Manhattan. You've got Google kind of stealthily, and Google's a gangster in how they're doing this, signing, you know, sort of like quiet deals to build 1 and 3 gigawatt scale data centers right now, mostly solar and battery, which we'll talk about. You've got Anthropic saying 50 gigawatts by 2028. You've just got all these things. And then you've got Elon, the original solar maxi, who is the most solar pill person in the world, saying he wants to build 1 terawatt of compute. Okay. These numbers sound grandiose. They sound insane, but like, I mean, I'm not going to fade Elon, are you? And you see all these companies basically saying, if you trust the scaling laws, like Leopold, the guy that we discussed a couple weeks ago, and you believe we just...
I started listening to... He is on a podcast with...
Dwarkhead.
Yes, I started listening. It's like 4 hours long. Yeah. So I started...
That's good.
And I learned how to pronounce the last name, but I already forget.
Yeah.
It definitely wasn't what you said.
Yeah, no, I feel a little bad about that. I'm sorry.
I want to say Aschenbrenner, but
yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Good job.
Okay. Anyways, we already gave some love for the Tiz. I apologize for that, the other name. But anyways, he basically is just like, trust the curves. Scaling laws are not dead. We just need a lot more compute. He's calling for hundreds of gigawatts. I think he's going to end up being like Mez was in the early 2010s. He's the most bullish person I know predicting stuff, but I think he's going to be too conservative. Because whenever you see a J curve, never take the under. That's my general thesis. So you need all of this compute. Problem is, the grid as we have it today, and there's not really just one grid. There's actually, depending on how you look at it, kind of three grids, and then there's a lot of subgrids below that, but like East, West, Texas, because Texas always does its own thing. And the more you drill into things, the more you realize our grid cannot take the amount of compute we're trying to bring online. Impossible. Impossible. So context. ERCOT, which is the freest electricity market in the world in Texas, 80 gigawatts of peak load or peak demand right now. What that means is whenever it's hot in Texas, which is usually every summer, you got all the ACs running, you have the industrial smelters doing their smelting, the businesses are running whatever they're running, the computers, the data centers they already have there, which I don't know if it's a super hot spot, but I imagine there's some. That's 80 gigawatts. Okay. The amount of demand to interconnect mostly AI data centers right now, I think I already told you, you already read the essay, but.
Tell us.
Like 140, at least. So basically double that. And the AI boom is still very early. And it's not just Texas. You can go to all of the different, you know, states around the world and just see, you know, the TLDR is the amount, even in Michigan, which was shocking to me. You have a question?
Go ahead.
Yeah. Even in Michigan, which was shocking to me, which is like a much, much smaller market, you have at least a doubling and sometimes like a tripling or more of all of the existing load asking to get built. Now, for the energy people in the audience, I will give the caveat that yes, these queues are often oversubscribed and a lot of these projects don't plan to get built. And because, and this is one of the ways we're going to go there, why is that? Because it's so fucking hard to get an internet connect to the grid that you throw in every possible application humanly possible. You try and get all the finance you can because you know most of these are not going to get approved. And just having that sweet, 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 sweet spot in line is so important. Yes, these are, and that's the problem, by the way. These are numbers that are inflated. But even if you like discount them heavily, we're talking about increasing the grid in a way that we've never done.
Do you know offhand how much like solar has been built out that's been built out? So it's not like a proposal, but it's been built out waiting to get connected.
Yeah.
And just sitting there.
Well, typically you don't just have stuff built out waiting to get interconnected. There might be some, but generally you get the interconnect first because that's the project. Okay. So when you have the project finance for this stuff, you know, the project financier, and these are typically really big funds or really big banks or funds like TPG or whatever, they need basically like assurance that there's an off-taker and generally an interconnect. And so a lot of these projects will only get built, they'll break ground on it once they know it's going to happen. There might be other examples of that. Maybe people that are deep in the industry can share some other examples, but that's generally the way it works.
You need
that.
How much latent or like how much delay is there once you get that interconnect approval?
Yeah.
How long from that till you're producing energy?
Well, that's a great question. And that's changing in real time. So right now, the interconnection queues, and I don't know, this is interconnection queues. This may not be from approval. So I don't know that specific piece of this, but 5 years. It's insane. And it's gotten way worse in the last couple of years.
So I assume anybody who, I mean, I agree with all of the stuff you're laying out, sounds very rational and logical. I think historically, it feels like these maybe like people doing the grid and generation and production were separate from the consumption of energy. But I think because there's all these big dollars being thrown around like AI data centers, they right. know that they're going to exceed the grid. How much do you think they're saying we also need to plan for the energy, or are they saying we need to find third party providers, or how does that dynamic work?
Well, I'm not sure I understand your question. Who? On
like, so Zuckerberg says, I'm going to spend $600 billion in the US.
Yeah.
And he's like, we need to build tons of data centers because AI stuff's going off the rails.
Yes.
Is he saying, I hope somebody shows up with the energy, or is he saying, we need to fix the energy thing for ourselves?
That's a good question. I think it differs company by company. So generally speaking, my understanding is they probably do for them internal. I'm not an expert. If there's people at the hyperscalers, we'd love to get more of the hyperscalers coming to our summit. We've got the energy people. Awesome. if you know hyperscalers or cloud folks, we definitely want to get more of those folks in the room to better understand
the
details.
Core weaves of the world.
The core weaves, which hopefully we'll get. Chase, hopefully from Crusoe, is going to be a yes. But we'd also love to get folks.
No pressure, Chase.
Yeah, no pressure. If you're listening to this, shout out. You know, Chase is a day zero Hivemind LP as well. But we need like decision makers from the big companies. And so I guess it differs company by company. Zuck may be a little different because he can just do some more of what he wants. But generally speaking, I think they would contract out to someone else to actually build the energy infrastructure piece of this. I don't know if they actually want to own the data centers themselves or not. If there's one entity that does
that. I
mean,
I would say in almost all the hyperscalers, I think they do want to own the data centers.
Yeah, probably. Like that makes sense.
Yeah. And so I'm just wondering, would, because the energy piece of it is such a big risk, and it's also kind of like strategic, if you have a third party who could turn it off, then you're kind of like, you know, in a bad power dynamic with them.
Yeah.
So if you're like, look, I'm going to go build out this huge data center, are you also saying I'm also going to build out the energy for my data center?
Yeah.
Or are they, like historically, they've been a little more separate, but it seems to me that those
would generally converge. Yeah, generally you do have both parties agree. So you have an off-taker. So whoever is the solar or whatever, any energy generation site builder, they're going to have a contract with a hyperscaler to get going. And even then, by the way, it's a very interesting, another company in my portfolio, Sunoda, Austin Mitchell, who is also sort of an expert in the energy stuff, also going to come. He has made the point that even in those worlds, like so much of this industry is risk driven.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if you say, I have this contract from Google, like they could still back out. And so there's always this risk of like, how do we know we're actually going to get paid? Something that both he and Satoshi are working on in slightly different ways is like, how do you reduce credit risk? So you have like real-time settlement of payments, which is something.
When you say Satoshi, the audience might.
Oh, sorry. For Satoshi Energy, satoshienergy.com.
Are you talking about the risk between the people constructing the generator and the people who would be consuming it?
And mostly for the underwriter.
And I'm saying, isn't it the case that if you know that you're going to invest hundreds of billions of dollars in building the data center, you may not choose to work with a third party?
Well, that's a great question.
Like, is it a very different skill set? I know that like it's a different skill set building software versus building a data center.
Yeah, it's definitely
a
different
skill set. But they've all adopted the expertise internally to be able to build the data centers.
It's a good question and something that I would love to get those folks to have a better understanding. My sense is that's probably changing in real time. Historically, it is a very different skill set to be able to, for example, navigate the interconnection process, build the farms. Like, that's what a company like Satoshi does. Mm-hmm. And they're like, they're effectively brokers between data centers and, it used to be, more miners, but now AI as well. And the energy asset owner. And the energy asset owner typically, I mean, to be clear, like we're talking about scales of like many, many billions of dollars to build this kind of stuff out. So you generally have some major underwriter at the table. And like, yes, the Googles and Facebooks could underwrite that, but like that's not been their core business. It's very different in terms of the returns profiles they're going to get from something else. But to your point, that could be changing. It probably is changing.
It feels to me like it would be changing.
Yeah.
So shouldn't we definitely try to get folks from Google, Microsoft, Facebook? Yeah.
Yes. I've got the energy side pretty covered. I don't have that yet. And that should be
because I have like a big strategic question about
that. Let's get to work on that.
Yeah. That sounds like an interesting one. To me, it feels rational that would change because it's not like a money issue.
Yeah.
And they're already committing. And if they're going to be like, you know, it's almost like any strategic relationship. Like if you have a single customer, you're in trouble. If you have thousands of customers, then any one of them could abandon. Whereas if you are the single customer, you should just also, you can arrange project financing.
I'll give you one data point on what's happening. Google is being, and again, a lot of this is kind of like, Google is like, you know, Google is lasagna right now.
Yeah. Silent like a G?
Silent like a G.
In lasagna?
Yeah, like, you know, Facebook's
out
here.
I say Google is like a G.
A G in all sense. Facebook's out here making a lot of noise. Elon's making a lot of noise. By the way, Elon's going to own it all. I mean, again, if I had to bet the farm on who's going to build the terawatt of off-grid, it's going to be Elon. But like, we should all still try and like get more people involved. But like, it's going to be Elon. And Google's the only other in my mind group that could try. And like, as I've gone on the rabbit hole, they're more impressive than I realized, but I still wouldn't pay Elon. So what they're doing from what I can tell is they're taking major positions in a lot of these companies right now.
Mm-hmm.
On the development and data center side. So two major positions they've taken in the last several months. The big one, which is very interesting to me, is Intersect Power. Intersect raised, I think it was like $800 million round, like very large round. And they're still a private company, but they basically are a solar developer, solar and storage. That's basically what they do. They do some nat gas and hook up some nat gas. But they raised a major strategic round from Google and from TPG and their climate fund. And it's not Google, but they effectively are, it's a quiet acquisition, I'd say.
Yeah. I have a question. Yeah. Would love to discuss your views, your most recent views on Bitcoin's role in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll bring up a couple of examples.
Please.
Recently, we talked in this show, I don't know, maybe a few months ago, but it was this year, we talked about how these data center companies, they either emerged to satisfy AI or they've transitioned from Bitcoin to AI.
Yeah.
But that Bitcoin still plays a role, at minimum, to be a scout, scouting new physical locations and being the first user of, to build out. And then stage two would be to advance it so that AI can be used there. So I assume that hasn't, so that's one way that Bitcoin is related. But what about 4 years ago, over 4 years ago, you wrote the paper in conjunction with Square and us, which talked about a different application, which was just making it more economical to finance new energy projects.
Yes.
But with a combination of Bitcoin mining, batteries, and solar.
Yep.
And in an oversupply of solar so that you can address the duck curve. Have your views changed on that? Do you still see Bitcoin playing that role? And then two, are there any other ways you see Bitcoin being part of this?
Yes, for sure. And I should address one thing before I jump into those questions, which I think is important just to sort of tie the knot on this for the audience. So a big part of my thesis in this essay is, if the grid is so sclerotic and so fucked that we literally, even if we slashed regulation, which I think, yes, that's part of it, but it's not just regulation. It's also just like the physical infrastructure is so bad and so dated. I think one of the civic engineer groups gave us a D+ infrastructure rating. There's also even if you wanted to build a lot more transmission distribution, good luck getting transformers. There are no transformers. So there's all of these problems where even if you wanted to slash all regulation, go full Texas, and Texas is doing that, it's extremely difficult to imagine a world where that could happen in the next 5 years. And one of my theses, by the way, is that the next 5 years matters a lot. And so there's also this position in Silicon Valley, which is very popular. And that position is, let's do nuclear. Not anti-nuclear, it's cool. There's no way nuclear is going to rock and roll in the next 5 years. I'm also the view that, I guess this is a little controversial. I don't mean this in a bad way, but it's kind of true, which is we either figure this out in the next 5 years or start learning Mandarin.
Yeah.
That's my take.
I knew you were going to say that.
That's a good line. But it conveys, it's kind of a joke, but it conveys a lot of information. And I'm not anti-China either. Good on them. They've been so smart and so ahead of the curve, but it's just kind of shocking to see the U.S. be so far behind.
Is it Leo? Leonardo?
Leopold?
Leopold. Sorry, Leopold.
DiCaprio? Leopold DiCaprio.
Leopold. He touches on the geopolitical ramifications.
Very well.
Right at the beginning of that podcast. So.
Yeah. And I would argue, energy. So one of my core theses on Bitcoin is energy-backed money. If you think about it, there really is only one currency of the known universe, and it's always jewels. That's it. It's only jewels. Everything we've ever used as money is a proxy in energy, full stop. Gold, oil, whatever you want to say, it's always jewels. And so, yeah. And what do countries fight over? Power. And what is power? Application of jewels. So you think about this, and anyways, there's a lot of interesting rabbit holes. I'm not anti-China, but I do think that it would be radically irresponsible for us to let them just run away with the AI race, because they're, by the way, you can see in my essay, you can see all over Twitter if you want, just look at Elon's Twitter feed, the amount of solar that China is deploying right now, over the next 3 years, the amount of solar they're set to deploy is going to dwarf our entire generation capacity in the United States combined, the entire grid, all of it. And it's a vertical line. And that's because they understand what's going on. And so, nuclear, yeah, they're building some nuclear, but you just can't compete with the cost curves. And so, by the way, I should also clarify, solar plus storage is the missing piece, because if you just do solar, yes, I get it. Sun only shines half the day, got it. But if you then combine that with cheap enough batteries, all of a sudden you can have many days off grid. And by the way, if you have other cheap sources of electricity, I'm not into that. If you have cheap geothermal, great. If you do, for whatever reason, have nuclear that's already working, great. There's going to be many uses cases for nat gas as well. And I actually have some creative ways you can do sort of in Casey's style, create synthetic nat gas from solar and just store it there on site, so you don't even need to use the pipelines. So anyways, that we can go deeper on that if you guys have questions about that. But
Bitcoin.
Yeah, we'll get into Bitcoin.
Well, I have one thing, and I think I mentioned it to you before a few weeks ago, but I was hanging out with a group of kind of sci-fi thinkers, and one guy was saying...
That sounds spicy.
One guy was suggesting that it may be credible to be collecting solar from outer space and beaming it back in some sort of microwave rectangular shape. I don't know. Do you know anything about this? Is this credible? Is this...
That I don't have a strong opinion. I've seen strong arguments either way. In the long run, yes. But let's get to that later, because I think that's its own really interesting rabbit hole. So in order to get to Bitcoin, the last piece of my thesis that's important is one of my goals, or one of my kind of like ideas for the summit is, okay, if the old grid is so broken, leave it, defect, and build a new grid in the style of Buckminster Fuller. You know, instead of trying to change things that are broken, just build something new that makes the old obsolete. Like why waste all of our time, like with all these frustrating, just impossibly opaque rules and all this stuff? Like, let's just go build new.
Yeah.
And so there's obviously many impediments to doing that. But my sort of vision for this is, can we build eventually a terawatt scale, many of them, grid, off-grid, solar plus storage, and maybe you need some nat gas, and there's ways to do that, fine. Sites where you don't need the interconnection. I would love to get the interconnection. And eventually my view is we connect all of these sites together and eventually subsume the old grid, and the old grid joins us in this new free market. Now, to your question on Bitcoin, in order for
how media has worked, by the way, right? With the internet.
That's how everything works. I don't think this is a controversial opinion at all. It's like, that's how payment networks work. What's the old story of, like, you know, we started doing the internet over phone lines, right? Beep, boop, boop, boop,
yep,
boop. And then
modems.
And then we got to whatever we're using now. And anyways, fiber.
But meaning, like, when Twitter launched day one, it was like, you're talking about sandwiches that you're eating for lunch. The New York Times does not want to be there.
Right.
But it's like a new way to broadcast, communicate.
Yeah.
And then over time, the New York Times says, actually, we better join Twitter and have an account.
Yeah.
Right? So it's kind of that same pattern seems to play out again and again.
So,
and the internet did it to media, but you're talking about how it probably gets done in the grid and energy.
Electricity. Yeah. So to your questions, I'll take them one by one. Has my views changed on what's going to be the, I forgot what you call it, but like the species, that the lichen?
The paper that we wrote 4.5 years ago, do you still hold that view?
Yeah, I do. But I think one thing I've changed my mind on is I don't think, at least in the short run, Bitcoin is going to be the biggest early adopting species. Thank you. I think it's going to be AI. I think Bitcoin will play a role in this.
To create the most economical way to build out a new energy system, is your current thesis solar plus battery or solar plus battery plus Bitcoin? Because the paper 4.5 years ago was all three.
I think it is short term. I think this is changing still in real time. I don't think we're still at the point where solar plus Bitcoin plus battery fully pencils with the data center yet. But I do know one company where the founder will be speaking. And it's not Satoshi, it's another one. probably giving away too much information. Shit. Anyways.
I'm not going to say, but it's one of these two.
No, exactly. tells me that that's going to happen in the next year.
What's going to happen in the next year?
That there will be examples of totally off-grid, solar plus storage, plus completely depreciated S19 style, old ASIC miners. And that gets into a very interesting question, because in order for that to work, you know, you either have to be okay running it less than 24/7 if you have the new generation miners, because those are expensive, or you have to buy ones where the CapEx is effectively zero or super low because you've already depreciated them.
Right.
So I think that's going to happen first. I do expect that to start happening the next year or two. He might be a little overly bullish, maybe not. But I think that one thing I changed my view on is, in the early days, I thought Bitcoin would be, that's the thing we go and we build new societies and civilizations around Bitcoin mining. Maybe. But I do feel much more confident that that first lichen species, or whatever you want to call it, is going to be AI data centers. So my view now is, it's going to be, you know, these multi-gigawatt data centers as your first off-taker. And then over time, it's going to grow out. And I actually think, Balaji's idea of the network stake, maybe this is how the network stake actually evolves, is like you build a giant-ass data center in Abilene, okay? And now you have all this electricity. And because if you're doing another advantage of doing solar and storage is it's modular. If you do nuclear, you design it for years and that's, you know, it's a 1 gigawatt plant. That's what you get. Solar, you can just keep expanding. Solar and storage, as you go from a gigawatt to 10 gigawatts to 100 gigawatts to a terawatt. And I think that we're going to see like new cities pop up around these data centers. And Bitcoin will definitely eventually be part of that. And as it keeps getting cheaper and cheaper, the miners and, you know, the price of Bitcoin keeps going up, it'll probably play more of a role. Where I see Bitcoin playing a massive role in this vision.
Are you all right?
Make sure I got that out. Yes, please, DK. Thank you. Yeah, and that's good. Thank you. I think it's going to be the Bitcoin network more and more. I think the miners are certainly going to play a role, but I think that if you listen to this kind of crazy vision I'm talking about, if we build completely new grids, you need a way to do effectively supra state settlement. And the way to meter electricity in real time. And so increasingly, I am extremely, 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 extremely bullish on this future where you're in real time doing electrons for Bitcoin. And you can literally just meter that in real time. You know, so much of the failures of our grid, it's the same. Why do we have failures in banking? Why do we have failures in universities? Why do we have failures in home building? Why do we have failures in healthcare? Once you have a monopoly, innovation stops. You can't use the holy nature of prices, which is to bring in all these disparate pieces of information into one piece of information. Like prices are magic. And this is why I effectively think Hayek was right. And by the way, in order to do this, you're going to need a sly roundabout way to build a new grid, just like you did to take money away from the monopoly there. And it's going to be much harder because we have to deal with atoms, not just bits. But what's missing is, you know, not only the infrastructure, but once you have new infrastructure and you can actually kind of build new rules. And again, I don't think the people like managing these are like evil or anything. I think it's just like they have rules from like 1910. And like, turns out now we have the internet. Turns out now solar is really cheap. Turns out you have batteries now, which can arb in real time. And batteries, you know, I'm increasingly thinking of as the high frequency traders of this whole world. So batteries, I'm more and more bullish on. Like, I would love to like back more battery companies that are building battery fleets. That's very valuable.
We should get battery people at the Type 1 Summit as well.
Yeah, we should 100% get the best battery people. Michael Dell's kid is doing something fascinating. Fascinating. Genius. He's basically kind of doing what we used to do for solar when I was in Resi Solar, where we would kind of finance the solar panels for you. You pay nothing up front or reduced up front, and then we take a cut of the savings. He's doing that for batteries and oversizing batteries in Texas, which allows them to basically build a giant, sort of a virtual power plant or more of like a virtual battery where they can then interact with Texas's best free market. But even Texas's market is not nearly as good as it could be if you had real-time pricing for everyone. And so anyways,
what's the name of that company, by the way? Remember?
I don't remember.
Okay, we'll look it up.
I'm super long. We should definitely get them there. Super long. I think Valor and Founders Fund and some others, I guess that's going to be a good one.
Cool.
Anyways, so what I see Bitcoin doing is enabling real-time markets. And I actually even see a world for the Nostr community. Like, you know, there's so many problems. By the way, there's all these national security risks with the grid. Like, that's going to get hacked. That's going to be crazy when grids start getting hacked. Maybe the Spain thing already was. And so with Nostr now, you could do something. And, you know, I'm not saying it's definitely going to be Nostr, but, you know, Ben from Ellen Bits has been doing all this really cool. He's always doing the hardware tinkering. And like, he's already getting this like idea of you could have every device have a Nostr identity. And that's really cool because now you can imagine every load asset, every generation asset, every storage asset has a private key, and that's its identity. And it can then send messages back and forth to each other. And you can really, with Bitcoin, Lightning, whatever ends up working with Lightning and Nostr, the dream is to build a free market for electricity and internet of electricity. That's where I think Bitcoin's going to play the biggest role.
Cool. But by the way, I already got questions from people interested in Type 1 Summit.
Yeah.
And for those that aren't able to come, is anything going to be recorded, or do you think there'll be like some kind of published summary of what we discuss?
Good question. I don't want to commit to that now because I haven't thought about it. And so what I will say is the goal at this point, and, you know, obviously this is a collaborative effort, so we should all figure this out together. I don't know. But I would say we should aim for doing, we're going to have some kind of more, you know, discussion panel-y type things in the morning. and probably live stream that or at least record it. And then the afternoon and evening, totally Chatham House. So if it's Chatham, I mean, yeah, we'll have to see like how much we want to summarize or not.
Yeah. Even in Chatham House, we could publish a report and just not
attribute
people.
Yeah.
Okay.
And do you have a sense, like, if we, like, let's say we're sitting here the day after Type 1 Summit, there's been tons of new ideas shared, a lot of new connections made and relationships. Is there sort of like a go forward path? Like, would there be a Type 1 Summit 2 or maybe a company or two that gets started from that? Or like, do you have sort of a goal?
I have Mind Fund 4.
Steve knows what's up.
Is that what it is?
Absolutely. Yeah,
oh, no. Okay.
I mean, well, if we do a Type 2 Summit, we'll have had to reach Type 1.
I meant Type 1 Summit. Part two.
I know what you mean. Yeah, I mean, I'm going into this with a very open mind. Obviously, you know, one of my goals is I want to fund some of the projects that come out of this. And I've already, honestly, even just yesterday, we've already had, I think, four or five, like I would consider, I don't know if they're elite level entrepreneurs yet, but at least elite level thinkers, people I've been like following mm-hmm. pretty obsessively, reach out. I think we'll get a bunch of them to come here. And I don't know which ones are going to be like, maybe some of them will team up. Maybe some of them will, you know, I don't know. So yeah, I would love to fund some of these. And I would also love to help, you know, I have a relatively small fund, so it would be great to get some of the bigger funds and the infrastructure fund guys here as well. We're hoping to get, you know, would love to get folks from places like TPG and Blue Owl and all these, and like, you know, it'd be cool if like maybe we help, you know, at the early stages and they can actually make this like a reality with like the kinds of capital that, you know, you need. It's like tens of billions of dollars. But yeah, I don't know. I'm very open-minded and like, who knows what's going to come out of it.
Cool. I like that. You know, just like explore the possibilities and see what kind of magic.
And for those listening interested, what's the URL for the website?
So type1summit.org, and the one is a numeral. So type1summit.org. If you want to read my essay, which talks more about it, I think it's linked on there, but hivemind.vc/grid.
And people can apply to...
Yes. Participate. So we should talk about that. I mean, I would love to have as many people as possible. I do think, honestly, just from feedback yesterday, I think this is going to like oversubscribe super, super fast. So, yeah, I mean, definitely apply if you're interested. I mean, we're going to have super limited space because we want to keep this really tight and, you know, encourage as much conversation in the Chatham House. But we need to figure that out. I mean, I would love to get people involved. Yeah, like, I don't know. To tell us what you want to contribute, what you hope to get out of it. Those are some of the questions. If you have a contrarian take on the future of electricity, we're interested in hearing that. And yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll probably work as a group to figure out, you know, who comes.
We also talked about different types of people we'd love to have here to make it a richer experience. So yes. So we'll get to work on our own networks. But if people listening know folks at the big tech companies that work on infrastructure for energy, data centers, that would be...
super helpful.
Yeah, helpful. And who else did we name?
The big project finance shops, the people that are financing the big, you know, TPGs, Blue Owls of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Great.
Cool.
One thing we maybe should have mentioned at the beginning, we didn't talk about our sign.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, like, yeah.
Tell us about the sign.
Speaking of electricity.
And construction.
Well, I'm not the expert on the sign. I just know there's a new sign.
It's
people can see that.
Yeah,
it's partially working. So
it makes you look kind of like a Christ figure.
There's a...
You sort of have a halo around you.
So it's super cool neon sign.
The new Satoshi.
Custom design, right?
It's dope.
Yeah. Down here, you know, that's where you can turn it on. There's two boxes. You notice the middle PB is not lit up. We discovered a mosquito that got fried.
A literal bug.
Yes. And it apparently caused it to stop working. So we have to debug our bug problem.
Which, by the way, I learned recently, that's the reason we say debug in computers too. The old days when we had the tape recorder stuff.
It was like a moth, I think, right? I think the original bug was a moth.
Mm. Okay.
It made its way in.
Anyway, so we're proud of our sign, but it's only partially working. Hopefully we get it in working order by next week.
It's pretty fucking sick. Shout out to Alex, who I guess thought of this. Like,
this is very cool.
This is cool.
Yeah. And I like that we got real neon.
And it also took like 10 hours to install.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was earlier this week.
It's no joke. But it looks very nice.
Yeah,
there's like paint involved. I mean, there's like actual neon gas in there.
So, Max, you also wanted to talk about the flippening.
Oh yeah,
or a flippening.
Yes,
a new type of flippening.
A new flippening.
Tell us about.
Oh well, I mean, my thinking about this came from a couple of different places. You know, I briefly scrolled through a couple of the talks from the last Bitcoin conference, And, you know, I briefly scrolled through Balaji. I think Balaji has a lot of good ideas. Scriptiveness aside, I think he has a lot of good ideas. And one of them, I hadn't thought of this yet. I guess I have kind of informally thought of this. We've sort of mentioned this in the show, but it just really crystallized for me was based on some, I guess, numbering, some data that they crunched at Coinbase. His guess was that, you know, the total number of billionaires in the world, which I think he shares like 3,000, something like that, that we know of, is, you know, basically once Bitcoin, somewhere between $100,000 a coin and $1 million a coin, we have a flippening where the majority of the world's billionaires are Bitcoiners. And that's very interesting for a number of reasons. One of the reasons is very interesting to me in relationship to the Type 1 Summit, in relationship to a prior PBJ episode where we discussed building an open source foundational model, and also inspired last night, as so many things are for me, in a great spontaneous sauna conversation, as I was talking for someone working at one of these HCI companies, the human computer interface, basically like Neuralink, like putting a chip in your brain. And, you know, increasingly coming away from that conversation, I was one, more excited about learning about, you know, this, the singularity, or the fusion or whatever you want to call it. But I left just like terrified. I was already scared, but now I'm like, oh man, like as much as I love the compute and the solar and the money, like that's all great. And we need to fix that first. Like there's so many, again, like if I could go back to what I was saying earlier, so many incentive structures in our world that are just broken. And we have the tools with Bitcoin, with Nostra, all this stuff to like fix it in a way that you don't have a corporation or government. And I just think that corporations and nations are just outdated structures. Like they're not bad. They're not evil. It's just, they had their run in the 19th or 20th century. And now it's time for internet native stuff. And hearing him say all this, I was like, man, there is, and I get the people that they and Neuralink and others are putting chips for now are people that are paralyzed. And yeah, if you're paralyzed, totally makes the risk trade-off makes it totally worth it. But like, would you guys put a random chip, even from someone like Elon in your head? I wouldn't.
No way.
Absolutely no fucking way on this. Like, no fucking way. And, but at the other hand, it's kind of like AI.
Future generations might say yes easily.
Well, maybe, but here's the thing. It's not that I want to be clear. It's not that I wouldn't put a chip in my brain. It's that I wouldn't put a chip in my brain, closed source from a company or a government that I can't audit and know what the hell is going on.
Yep.
And so, yeah, the more I was talking about this, the more I was like, oh man, like it's like AI when we talked about the open source stuff. It's like, I don't want to be left behind. You know, I want to have the superpowers that come with being transhuman or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But like, I'm just not gonna, I just never would put a company in my head, no matter who the company.
Have you seen the Black Mirror episode about this?
No.
There's a great Black Mirror episode that walks through this. I'll fail to get the exact details right, but there's some sort of, I think there was some sort of injury that this woman had, and there was one way to save her life. She's on the operating room about to die, and they ask her husband, well, hey, we have this new startup that claims they can solve this thing. Should we try? And she was on the, you know, basically on her deathbed. And he said, yeah, sure, go for it. And then they did it. And then they walked through and like, you know, oh, we have an expansion pack available. Would you like to buy that? Like, well, no, I'd rather not. And then she sort of has Tourette's or something weird. And then like, actually, you can, you know, you can buy the expansion pack and that'll fix it. And so it kind of, you see this little boiling the frog, you know, and then it gets to the point where she's like totally dependent on this corporation and there's no real alternative option. And I think it's, you know, like a lot of Black Mirror, it's like both near and familiar and very likely in a sense, unless you take explicit choices to opt out or to shape or change the incentives for kind of how it works. It's a worthwhile view if you're thinking about getting a chip implanted in the head. I'm not thinking about getting a chip implanted. Not now. Maybe if there's an open source one.
You were before watching that episode.
I don't like kings and masters and I don't like people controlling my thoughts. So.
Chips in your brain.
Not for me.
Not for you. Well, anyways, so I agree with you. The TLDR is I want an open source version. I'm open to exploring this in the future after they've had, you know, decades of figuring this out or whatever. But I would only consider if it was open source. And so I asked this guy, I'm like, how much money would you need? I was like, will you guys open source? And he's like, I'm just a software engineer. I don't know. He's like, sounds cool, but like they need to make money. And so maybe Elon will do it. Again, with Elon, you're rolling the dice. Like, he could just go totally like he did with Tesla patents and open source, of course. But again, you never want to just like depend. I mean, who knows, right? And Elon may not be here in the future, right? So
he's like, here's a self-driving car. You can drive yourself. I'm like, that's not what I had in mind.
DK is more skeptical. but regardless, my broader point is you don't want to be dependent on any centralized entity to put a chip in your brain, full stop. But you also don't want to be left behind, because then you're going to be like an Aborigine when everyone else is off, like, you know, going to Mars and stuff. So, which is not necessarily bad. And maybe the
I don't mind that, actually.
Yeah, actually, maybe maybe that's
the
way
trade offs. I think I'll take that one.
Given the current drafts, but again, we could imagine a better world. And so I was asking, well, how much money do you think, roughly, if you had to guess, would it take to develop a product that you could bring to market? He was like, I don't know, $50 to $100 million. So I was like, I mean, it sounds like a lot, but it's not that much in the grand scheme of things. And then that's when I started thinking, I was like, you know what? Maybe the biggest legacy of Bitcoin really is going to be that some of these people get that still have cypherpunk values, that still care about human freedom, that still want the light of consciousness to shine on, that are not completely jaded and nihilistic. Maybe the biggest legacy of Bitcoin is they're just going to fund all of these projects, maybe for profit, maybe as like kind of like cathedral style, just like, like, you know, giving back to humanity. And like, yeah, like I thought about it, like the open source model, that's important, but this is even more important. And I was thinking, like, could I back this out of Hive Mind? Like, probably too early for that right now. And like, you need way more capital than we have. But like, could a bunch of, you know, Bitcoin billionaires who care about human freedom come up? Okay, we're going to start working way ahead of time on the open source Neuralink.
Yeah. I think that's a good, I mean, we're working out of a studio right now, courtesy of two wealthy Bitcoin holders.
Yeah,
right?
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Wences, thank you, Mark. All of Presidio Bitcoin is funded by them. Or not all now, because we do have 25 paying members, which helps defray the cost. But still, the majority of the costs are funded by them. So that's just like a small example of what can come.
Yeah.
And it does seem like I didn't watch Balaji's talk on this, so I just did my own quick math. Mm-hmm. Looks like 3,000 billionaires. So to flip that, there needs to be 3,000. I think $1 million Bitcoin gets us there. I don't know about $100,000, but
Does that mean there's $3,000 or 3,000 people who have about $1 billion worth of purchasing power?
Yes.
So if
we assume none of the current billionaires have Bitcoin, then it would flip. It would flip earlier, sooner, if some of them are, obviously some of them already have Bitcoin.
And to be clear, we're not saying all 3,000, 1,500 to get 51%.
Sorry? But
presumably, as Bitcoin is growing to be worth, $1 million per Bitcoin, that even if the existing billionaires in US dollar terms don't hold any Bitcoin, presumably they're starting to buy some during that process, but they also continue to hold USD assets and they don't.
Right. I'm just saying, in the extreme case, none of the existing 3,000 ever have Bitcoin. Yeah.
Right.
We would need 3,000 Bitcoin billionaires to flip. And
what is
well,
the
I'm
holding?
Saying you need half now, like to be 51%.
No, because if you have 1,500, then you only have a third. The billionaires.
Oh, they say there's 3,000.
There are 3,000 today. Assume they just sit statically.
Got it. Yeah.
Meaning that 3,000
the additive. People to be added. Yeah.
So
depends on how fast we hyperinflate. But okay.
Anyway, I mean, so like to me, it's inevitable. Like Bitcoin is going to get to $1 million. There will be a flip.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like the flip.
The flip.
The flip.
Team flip.
What do you think what do existing billionaires do with that wealth? And then what would Bitcoin billionaires, would it look very similar? Would it look pretty different in some ways? Like you mentioned funding Neuralink or an open source model.
Well, one concern I'd have, just looking at the amount of donations now from wealthy Bitcoiners, I think it's quite poor. Meaning,
it's just like a few.
It's a few, right?
They're doing a lot of lifting. Like,
Wences has done a lot over time, and Mark more recently. John Pfeffer has done a lot, but Michael Saylor's funded certain things too. So, but it's a short list.
Yeah.
So it's a small percentage.
Jack is funding like half of everything.
It's a small percentage of Bitcoin whales and a small percentage of quote available funds, like, you know, that gets into a philosophical discussion. But so I don't know how much that will change. And then for those that do donate, that gets to your question of like, do they fund different initiatives than have been done historically? Because maybe it skews libertarian, skews cypherpunk.
maybe excuse open source.
Excuse open source.
Excuse more digital.
So like historically, excuse more digital. So that
people got into that's real total, estate.
That seems very plausible. And then do they structure it differently than historically, like for profit versus nonprofit or
something new,
DAOs or something? I don't know.
I wonder if some of the limitation in choice is sort of once you understand Bitcoin and you understand kind of it's going up forever, it's harder to say, look, I'm going to donate to a place that may not have that same belief and they might sell it to try to fund operations and it might get a little bit off the rails versus if I wait 10 years and then I do it, I can actually, make a bigger impact, do more, and I don't have the risk of people kind of like selling early to convert to some project which may not quite work. So I wonder if people become like more generous as that price rises, in a sense.
Well, you can also just lock it up.
That's what I said. You can lock it up and then they'd be forced to take out Bitcoin back loans.
Right.
But retain their Bitcoin.
Or you could you even do like HTLCs to time lock it to a future point or like dole it out over, like you almost set a budget and dole it out.
I wouldn't use HTLCs, but yes.
Okay, sorry.
Watch out. DK is getting into the Bitcoin technical. So I think, interesting structures like that, like programmable, like let's use programmable money. So that's like under-discussed.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up.
And it's also because you can imagine the structures changing. Like maybe the reality is some of these things are effectively public goods. And frankly, this is what the government should be doing. Like one day we'll have like an effective government again and like they'll be doing that. But maybe you basically need generous donors that skew open source, skew per freedom to get it started. But you could also be like a hybrid structure where it's like, okay, but then it becomes a company, right? Because one of my theses is that like imagine, and I would love to fund this out of HiMeM, it's probably way too early, but imagine you had an open source competitor in the, human brain interface. There's a lot of people that are going to be like, yeah, I'll do it, but like, I'm not using the proprietary one.
Right.
And particularly people that, tend to have money or, skew wealth, they'll understand why this is so important. So it's not like this is pure charity. Like you might need charity to kickstart things, but then I think you could build a great business too.
Yep.
Yeah. Food for thought.
You mentioned earlier gold and this discussion reminds
did
me.
Did I?
Just briefly. It was a passing conversation. Didn't he say something?
It's an awkward segue.
It's a super awkward segue.
It was planned in my mind. It was like an offhanded comment, I think, earlier. We can check the transcript. It's in there.
it was mentioning gold, the ancient civilizations visited by aliens.
Maybe that's what it was. Yeah. I think my head has just been visited by aliens.
That's what I heard on the ancient history.
It's a chip in his head is malfunctioning.
I would never get a chip.
I was talking to a friend yesterday who's a Bitcoiner, and he was trying to convince me of the gold hypothesis and thesis. And I've never been a gold person. I think I only came to understand gold after I came to understand Bitcoin. Like I think hearing the gold narrative initially was a turnoff. The e-gold narrative was a turnoff for me. I think I understand them both a lot better now, but I feel like gold has these problems with it. That we have custodying it and quantity is particularly challenging and transferring it and stuff, yeah. But this friend of mine was mentioning that it may be that instead, a lot of what we talk about is trying to help people understand Bitcoin and the philosophy and what it's all about and why it's not purely a technology and that it's different than all the rest of these kind of, crypto things. And, I thought maybe like there's a different framing that would help people kind of onboard, which is if people understood gold better and then understood the bugs. But I don't know, I don't feel like there's a lot of, at least in the last, let's say, decade, there hasn't been a lot of discourse about gold. But I think in recent years, there is. I think in the last couple of years, it's been one of the better performing assets. I don't track it super closely.
It has outperformed Bitcoin the past 4 years.
Has it? The past 4 years has outperformed
Bitcoin. We talked about this a month ago. And it's even outperforming it more now because it's all-time high.
Right. But it's easy for, I think it's easy for like sovereigns to buy gold. It's probably not easy for sovereigns to buy Bitcoin, both from like logistically and I think there's a lot of gold getting repatriated these days. Where, which is kind of like maybe portends war and stuff like that.
But by the way, sorry, just really quick question on that. Are there any companies that specialize in just helping sovereigns acquire and custody their Bitcoin? I guess Coinbase could do it. Other companies could be like, is there anyone that's what they're focused on? That seems like a great business.
Yeah, I'm not aware.
I assume anybody who does, I mean,
we should ask
Coinbase.
Yeah.
Like whether he's considered it or if he knows of others.
Yeah. If all you're right. out there doing that.
Alex Leishman.
It's a good idea.
Right. From River.
Yeah.
But if you have this as a great performing asset, you can kind of predict that all the sovereigns are going to continue to buy gold. I mean, you would think they're going to buy Bitcoin someday. Maybe some of them are, but like maybe you don't have as much IMF challenge. Maybe just have like, it's just like, it's more standard in a sense. It's easier for people to understand. You know, you don't get fired for buying, you know, whatever, gold. IBM or gold or whatever. So I wonder if actually just coming to a deeper understanding of gold, and it's like exciting again. I guess I didn't realize the last 4 years it's outperformed Bitcoin, but it's like exciting in a way. Does that draw in a bunch of attention that then gets people excited about gold? And then you come to learn more about like the problems and challenges and the opportunities with digital.
And surprised we haven't talked about this on the show. In my mind, to me, the whole digital gold narrative is like, I've been told so many times because within Bitcoin circles, I do think it's like, I think it is the one of the best ways, if not the best way, to like help people understand the potential value of Bitcoin in the future.
But that's if you believe in gold, then digital gold makes sense.
And that's, so the other point I was going to make is, I think, I forget if you said this pre-show or not, maybe I'm making it up, but...
It's the chip.
The chip. Talking. you know, is this a good story to narrative for like Silicon Valley big tech people? And I think no, unless it's maybe what you just said here, which is like, first educate big tech on why gold and then why Bitcoin. Because my experience with tech people is that they don't understand gold. And my own personal story, like I initially did buy, like a long time ago, I bought some gold because I was at the 101 level of investing, and like I found a bunch of sites and they're like, yeah, you should have a portion of in gold. I'm like, all right, I'll just follow that advice, right? and then the next step was, well, the Warren Buffett thesis, which is like, gold's stupid, it's a non-productive asset, there's no yield, you know, it doesn't earn anything, it's stupid. And I'm like, that's true,
you that pay it, people to dig it it's up not, it's and then not, you pay people to put it under.
I'm like, it is non-productive, it's stupid. So then I sold all my gold, and I actually wrote up like a 6-page like memo on like why it's so stupid to invest in gold.
For who?
I shared it with a friend. I think I shared it with you.
Steve does these like this private writing. And
then, I've never gotten a memo. I'll let you read it before I met you.
Yeah. I'm happy to share it.
Actually, I'd be curious.
It's kind of funny now. Then I followed.
We should live read it.
But then like similar to DK's path, then I got into Bitcoin, and then I understood gold.
Same.
So I think the average tech person, they are not invested in gold. They don't get gold. They sort of have the Warren Buffett view on it. So I think selling them on Bitcoin through that lens out of the gate is a non-starter. Yeah. So instead, and maybe what you're hoping to do, like we can explain why we now think gold has had value for thousands of years and why it still like is valuable today, that it's not just a bunch of stupid investors or people holding it. And then what are the characteristics of it that make it quite unique? And then be like, oh, Bitcoin actually has almost all of those characteristics and even more.
Right.
So are you winning? Is that what you were hoping to walk through?
I mean,
gold pillars.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say, I don't claim to be a gold expert.
Gold bug. Just, DK is the gold bug exactly. On the show.
I had a chat with a friend yesterday.
Do you fuck with Ron Paul?
Actually, to be honest, I don't own any gold. Like zero. So I'm not saying I'm bullish on gold, and I don't have much of an opinion about it. But this friend was pointing out to me that there's a lot of people who are paying a lot more attention to it today and are getting excited about gold because of the nation states are getting excited and they're repatriating it, and it's outperformed Bitcoin, I guess. I didn't realize it was, he mentioned the last 2 years, but you're mentioning the last 4 years. But I think there's...
I mean, you have to cherry pick the time frame.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
Bitcoin was 60K in 2021, then that's 4 years. And
but people who are not thinking about Bitcoin are thinking about gold, and they're just watching... His example was the last 2 years, it's been this fantastic run, I guess. And so he's like, you know, why wouldn't you talk about that story? Because like, it's mm-hmm. obviously exciting to people when numbers go up, right? And we'll, you know, instead of explaining Bitcoin, is there an opportunity to get people who are neither educated about Bitcoin nor gold to kind of use gold as an on-ramp to understand effectively the simple way I think of it now, which I've kind of always believed and had concern with, is like, if you believe that your government is here to serve you, then you don't need gold. But if you believe there's anybody in power who may have misaligned interests, then gold is your way to protect yourself from the misalignment.
Yeah. Well, go deeper. Imagine, I mean, I think this is a great question. You know, hey, I work at Google. I do tech stuff all day. The rock people are dumb. Why are they not dumb?
Well, I think I don't look at backward performance, but I think a lot of people are attracted to like, this thing has gone up a lot. Why has it gone up? Right?
And why so has it?
You work at Google. Maybe you want to have inflation protection. You want to be hedged against inflation. I think people who are successful in the financial ecosystem and the monetary ecosystem still sometimes hear about the problems with inflation and want to protect against it. And obviously holding Google stock is a fine way to protect against inflation and get AI upside. Gold is more...
But what is inflation? That's the greedy corporations, right?
Here's my current view on investing. I mean, we can talk about the properties of gold, which make it a unique asset. We can do that. But also, like, I'll start with my own why to invest in gold. I think for your average tech person, you shouldn't put like a quarter of your portfolio in gold. You're actually basically fine if you own no gold. You're not like a complete idiot and missing the boat on something. I think buying a like 1% or even like 50 basis points of your net worth in gold and actually self-custodying it.
That sounds scary.
I think that's the move. The rationale behind that, it's like insurance against the world turning upside down.
Yeah. Right?
And like if shit hits the fan and like the like fiat currencies die and the internet goes down or whatever, like Bitcoin, for whatever reason, Bitcoin hasn't completely dominated gold at that event.
Right.
Then, you know, holding gold, it's like extremely high awareness. Humans around the world
recognize
it and value it. So if you're in need of money to trade for weapons, food, shelter, whatever.
Cool. Now you sound like a Texan.
Well, I mean, we're talking about this like extreme event, right?
Right.
Yeah. Then you want to hold gold. So, but you don't need to hold like a huge portion of your net worth. Because the thing is, you'll be in such a horrible scenario, you'll be very rich, even if you only have a tiny percentage, because everything else will be like kind of worthless, right?
I think we should also just explain that, like, I hear you on that, but like, I think one of the reasons people are very skeptical of gold is like, because whenever people start talking about the gold, it's like, listen, when there's an apocalypse and you need gas for your motorcycle, you need the guns, even people that own the ETFs, which are probably, you know, false and paper traded or whatever, like, that's still, there's a middle ground too.
That's one, so maybe I shouldn't have started with that.
Yes, but that's
one
an extreme scenario.
Another scenario is simply like you need places to put your money.
Right.
And in almost every other asset class, it is a productive asset. So you need to value it. Like, what are the future cash flow projections for this stock?
Yeah.
Or for the S&P 500 or whatever. And if you're like, here's your projection and the market is valuing it higher than that, like, okay, I no longer want to put my money in that. And same with like, oh, I could buy some land and rent it out. But if the math doesn't work out where it makes sense for the rent prices, then I can't put my money there either.
Right.
And then like CDs and bonds, and like, if I can't put my money anywhere because none of that makes sense, where do you put it? Well, you can put it in a store of value that's independent of all that, independent of the nation, of all that stuff. And so it's like gold has been a unique asset class for that reason until the emergence of Bitcoin. And now Bitcoin is that alternative with similar properties.
Yeah. I would start maybe, I agree with all of that. I would start, I definitely wouldn't leave with the extreme scenario because I do think that's why the gold bugs get like painted is because they're like, okay, these are like the Mad Max people, like the preppers. And like, yes, the prepper case is there. I, you know, sincerely hope that never happens. I don't think it will. Like, I'm pretty optimistic. It's always good to have insurance. Always good to plan. You never fucking know. The world is a crazy place. But like, generally, I'm very bullish on humanity. We generally figure our stuff out. We generally go through bad periods and then like come together and like generally stuff works out. That's my belief. Whether I'm right or wrong, I'm sticking with it because it makes life a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing that I would start with the Silicon Valley crew, I think it is smart. And maybe someone should write a piece about this. Maybe one of us, maybe someone listening to this, that kind of just like, hey, you're, you know, a Google engineer and you haven't thought a lot about gold. You're seeing it going up. Why? The thing I would start with is actually the photo here in Presidio Bitcoin. I had my LP call this week. I had a couple folks come in person and, you know, it's really funny. Shout out to Maurice and Ben, if you're listening. But it's funny because Ben in particular, I can tell like they're open-minded. They thought the thesis was cool, but like I'm literally watching them join, particularly Ben. And I mean, this in a very good way, join the cult in real time. And so like the more they read, the more, you know, it started off as we started having these conversations, like, yeah, there's this Bitcoin thing. Like, you know, it seems like the Trump administration's going to kind of like line their own pockets. Probably a good idea. You start reading more and you're like, wait a second. Like, where does money come from? What is money? Like all these questions. And I'm seeing them in real time. Now he's going to come next week to our design week. Like I'm watching mm-hmm. someone join the cult in real time and it's awesome. And, you know, one of the things that really resonated with them when they were here in person was our, Andy Warhol, photo. Or painting or whatever it is in the kitchen. And it just shows a can of Campbell soup in the famous Andy Warhol style. And it just shows the price over time. And I don't know if those numbers are accurate. Do we know? Did someone actually check the math on that? Yeah, well, assume they did for a minute. It like the can of soup, it keeps going up over time. It was like a nickel and it was like 50 cents, like all this stuff. But then like the price jump in the last, you know, 5 years, they show it twice is just like, what? Like it was like, you know, a dollar and then it was $1.25, $1.50 in like 5 years. And you're like, wait a second, what's going on? That's them was a very powerful thing. They're like, yeah, like why is there so much inflation? So I'd start with something like that. That's like a fact. No one can dispute that's a fact. You might say it's more than is reported and it probably is, but that's a fact. Then you say, well, why is there inflation? And I think most people have never thought about this ever. They've never thought about what money is. And when they hear the popular talking points are, inflation. It's the greedy corporations. I actually like Bernie, but it's the greedy corporations, you know, or it's, you know, it's the supply chain. It's just like all these ridiculous things, but it's like, no, the reason there's inflation and sure, maybe short term, some things, whatever, but like, it's because we print money out of thin air. Like I always tell people, it's like, listen, if there's 10 Monopoly houses and you're playing Monopoly and you have $10, okay. And then all of a sudden, you just go to the bank and grab $10 and throw that on the table. There's still 10 houses. Now there's $20. Price of your house, the wealth did not change. There's 10 houses. Same as before and after. But now a house that used to cost $1 is $2 because you just threw $10 into the mix. And it's literally...
And if you try to sell it, you get taxed on the gain.
Yeah. It's literally a pea and shell game. And you're like, well, wait a second. Well, why is that? Why is that? Another way I think about it, maybe this will actually... resonate with the high tiz crowd is like, think of it as like height. Okay. You know, you're probably 5'10". Is that right?
5'10 and a half.
with his carbon plates in.
With the carbon plates. 5'10 and a half. If you came in tomorrow and I measured you again and you haven't changed, you're 5'10 and a half. That's what you've been probably your whole life. It's maybe age 18 or something. And I say, you know what, Steve? Actually, here's the thing. Today, you're actually 6'3". First, you'd be like, all right, sweet. Cool. All right. And then you'd be like, but why am I 6'3"? I didn't get any taller. And they'd be like, oh, don't worry about that. We just changed the definition of a foot and an inch. Just a little bit.
Right.
We just changed a little bit. And you'd be like, huh, that's kind of weird. All right, whatever. I never think about it. And the next time I come back, a couple years later, you're measuring me. I'm like, Steve, you're 7'8". Like, wait a second. 6'3 was cool. 7'8, now we're getting into like giant. That I don't want to be 7'8.
But all the 10-foot dudes are still getting all the ladies. What's up?
Yeah, exactly. What's going on? Yeah, the 10-foot dudes. Why are they 10 feet? it's just like, in the fullness of time and history, the way money works is going to be seen as so ridiculous because it is. It's like what
the best we had.
It's the best
before we had the internet. It was the best we had.
Well, it's not the best we had. The best we had was gold.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. And so that's its own thing. Right? And this gets back to your thesis of why do we have gold in the first place? Because if you measure the cost of an apartment or a wool suit or all these things in gold, it doesn't change. It only changes in fiat terms. And it changes more than Bitcoin because there's more inflation with gold. Anyways, but like one way that I've explained this to the engineer types that really resonates is, imagine, you know, if you're a scientist, there's a metric system, there's meters, there's Kelvin, there's systems that we use to measure things because we're doing science. And if I were out there telling you, actually, here's the thing, we're going to keep doing science, I'm just going to kind of slightly change the definition of a Kelvin or like of a meter every day. You'd be like, that's insane.
Right.
Because it is insane. But that's what we do with money. So Bitcoin is the metric system of money, full stop.
It's like a standard unit of account for money.
It's a metric system for money.
It's a great way
And gold has been that for thousands of years.
Yes.
Imperfect, but by far the best thing the humans discovered throughout our history.
Right.
And now we have developed the perfect system for measuring money, measuring wealth.
Closest to perfect. I mean, we'll see. Who knows? Maybe something far off in the future one day will even replace Bitcoin. For now.
Okay. I think we are down to just a few minutes. We have a third topic, do we?
The Apple memory stuff.
The Apple memory. Did you guys order your iPhone this morning?
Oh, is today the first
day? Today's the first day for pre-order.
Oh, I need to, because I want to be hacker-proof.
I ordered the orange one, of course.
Oh, there's an orange one.
Steve.
I don't know. I don't read the news.
I actually don't know either. I'm related. I have no idea.
I don't read the news, but I've got like an iPhone 13. I've got like an old school. So I'm
rocking the SE and it's busted.
My battery is
still light up great.
You know, less like
I've had two iPhone 16s in less than a year. So
okay. So you're very modern.
Due to failure. Well, yeah. Production issues.
I'm debating moving back to a Nokia at this point. So
get the flip phone.
Anyway, I'll have to check out the orange one. But no, they
ordered it.
The Apple announced a new type of memory in the iPhone 17, along with operating system software changes that implement memory tagging. I actually forget MIE, I think. I forget what it even stands for, but I didn't study the details, so don't ask me to explain it in depth, but the customer benefit is it significantly reduces or can even eliminate certain categories of malware. That's a good thing. So I mean, honestly, I could see this being a difference maker for people choosing between an iPhone and an Android phone.
If you said it's a new memory system,
is that the memory tagging? So a very common way that malware or viruses can take control of a computer and get like root access is if a software application is identified to have a bug, where you have like a memory overflow error. So you might have like an array, like a region of memory in which you there's a bug and it tries to access outside of that memory. And it's not the programmer's intention, but that's how the software works. If a hacker learns that, discovers that, then they can take advantage of it by getting the program to start running their software instead of the actual program. So with memory tagging, the actual hardware in conjunction with the OS can tag memory so that if that memory, like that out of bounds access is made, it will throw a hardware exception. And the OS can then decide to just kill the process. So it's pretty incredible.
So this
is done at the hardware level, you have an object and in memory, and then like the hardware actually knows
where it's supposed to be able to be allowed to live. Yeah, and is that has this been done before on like traditional computers and just made its way into iPhone finally? Or
what I read, I mean, ARM announced like sort of a memory tagging protocol maybe like 5 years ago, and I think it adopted that, and Apple extended and embraced it. I think they took that, adopted it, made it better. But I think Graphene OS got pissed off about this because they've been doing it forever. But like, you know, Apple, there's a lot more Apple customers and they control the hardware and the software.
Yeah.
Graphene OS doesn't control the hardware. So I think that's why
you need
it's
both.
A big deal.
Like if the could Android choose to do this, or is it like the OEM versus open source OS thing makes it tough to...
Like the Apple semiconductor chips were modified to support this. So, I mean, you could do it in software, but then it's like super inefficient.
I see.
One thing, I don't understand all that. I need to go deeper. It sounds great. One thing that I will say is, in general, it's awesome how much Apple really does seem to like walk the walk on privacy. You know, we talked about
security and privacy.
Yeah. Shout out to the OpenAI, or not OpenAI, the actual OpenAI, Maple AI, Open Secret guys, who, you know, have this, we talked about the secure or the trusted execution environment in the cloud, which effectively is they took something from Apple, or like a concept that Apple is pioneering their own cloud. They're giving it to everyone, which is awesome. We should find a way to get Apple more involved in the city of Bitcoin. Because I feel like there's so much, like our ethos is very, very aligned.
Yep. Yeah. I agree. Yep. We need, Ram comes here often and yep. he works for Apple. So he's got to help us out.
Yeah. That'd be cool. If there's any Apple people listening, like we're very aligned. So.
Very cool.
Totally. Yeah. All right.
I think that's a good wrap.
All right. Good to see you guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.